Hello everyone and welcome to the Cure Panel Talk Show. I'm Priya Menon, Scientific Media Editor of Cure Panel, joining you from India, and I welcome all of you this evening to Cure Panel's first episode on rare cancer and disorders. Hello everyone, I'm sorry I just got disconnected for a few moments there. I would like to apologize for the same. I'm back here now. And I welcome everyone to the Cure Panel Talk Show. I'm Priya Menon, Scientific Media Editor of Cure Panel, joining you from India. And I welcome all of you this evening to Cure Panel's first episode on rare cancer and disorders. This is Cure Panel's 59th episode. And today, as we begin our series on rare cancers and disorders, we are discussing Lynch syndrome. Mayo Clinic defines Lynch syndrome as an inherited condition that increases your risk of colon cancer and other cancers. Lynch syndrome is also known as hereditary non-polyposis colorectal cancer. A number of inherited syndromes can increase your risk of colon cancer, but Lynch syndrome is the most common. Doctors estimate that about 3 out of every 100 colon cancers are caused by Lynch syndrome. Lynch syndrome is characterized by the inheritance of genetic defects in the MLH1, MSH2, and MSH6 genes. This syndrome predisposes the family to developing colorectal cancer and endometrial cancer in women. Colorectal cancer due to Lynch syndrome also develops at younger ages than would be expected in people without the genetic defect. On average, 150,000 people a year is diagnosed with colorectal cancer in the United States, and about 50,000 people die, which makes colon cancer the number 2 cancer killer overall and the number 1 cancer killer among non-smokers. Today we are going to learn more about the emotional implications associated with Lynch syndrome. I would now like to welcome and introduce the panelists for the evening. We have with us Georgia Hurst. Georgia was diagnosed with Lynch syndrome in May of 2011, and due to the rarity of the syndrome, she was forced to educate herself and become her own advocate for her medical care. Georgia has a strong background in biology and has conducted extensive research on Lynch syndrome. She blogs about her journey with Lynch syndrome at ihavelynchsyndrome.com. We also have with us Megan Myers. Megan is a genetic counselor in the Gastrointestinal Cancer Prevention Clinic, a part of the Cancer Risk Program at the UCSF Helen Diller Family Comprehensive Cancer Center. Myers is also involved in research on families who have Lynch syndrome and social media tools that help families better communicate and share the genetic information with other at-risk family members. Next on the panel is David Dubin. David is founder of Alive and Kickin, a not-for-profit foundation and 3-time genetic cancer survivor. Dave has been cancer-free since 2010, and he continues to play soccer, coach, and manage a school workload. Dave's foundation conducts Alive and Kickathon soccer fundraising events. Welcome to the show, everyone. Before I begin, I would like to tell our listeners that if you have a question for our panel, You can let us know by pressing 1 on your keypad and we will bring you on air to ask your questions. You can also email your question to me, priya@trilex.com. I now invite Georgia to tell us about her journey so far and begin with the discussion. Georgia, you're on air.
Hi, Priya. Thank you so much for having me. Hi, Megan. Hi, David.
Hi.
Hi, Georgia.
How's everyone doing today?
Doing really well.
Well, it's good to hear everyone's voices. Thank you so much for having us all today, Priya. I can't thank you enough about having us on. We're very excited to be on here, and it really means a great deal to us as all three of us try very hard to advocate for Lynch syndrome on a regular basis and increase awareness. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. I can hear you clear. Megan and Dave, can you hear Georgia?
Yes,
perfectly.
I can.
Yeah. Yes, Georgia, please tell us, how has your journey been so far?
Oh, so initially when I was diagnosed, I was a bit taken aback by it. I was shocked because my older brother had passed away from colon cancer at the age of 36, almost 20 years ago. And then 4 years ago, my second brother at the age of 48 was diagnosed with stage 1 colon cancer. And when he was diagnosed, he had had surgery and had 3 feet of his colon removed the first time. And then 6 months later, the colon cancer came back with a vengeance. And the doctor knew of Lynch syndrome and asked that he be tested for that. And he tested positive for MLH1. And then he asked that I be tested as well because he knew there were implications for me as well. And I tested immediately after I found out about it. And a couple weeks after I was diagnosed, I had the prophylactic hysterectomy and oophorectomy. I was 40 years old at the time, and I basically had to assume some control over the situation because I was filled with anxiety and fear due to what had happened to my brothers and felt like I was next. So I thought I could assume some control over my genetic destiny by having the prophylactic surgery. The issue with me was I was only 40 and I was very healthy, and the surgery was a very hellacious experience for me. I was not ready to experience the number of issues that had presented themselves. I became very ill with lethargy, nausea, vomiting, depression, insomnia. I had tremendous hormonal issues. I could not get my hormone replacement therapy situated, and was running back and forth to doctors who basically subscribed to a one-size-fits-all approach to medicine, which was not working for me. So I struggled tremendously and ended up finding doctors who were willing to help me after a year of being very sick. And I basically started the blog as a catharsis in order to vent about my experience. At the time, I started it saying that, you know, you may be preventing cancer on one hand, but yet you're subjecting yourself to a host of other issues by having the prophylactic surgery. So I wanted people to be aware of what they were getting themselves into. And I just did not want them to go into this blindly, and I didn't want them to think that, you know, the surgery wasn't a big deal, because I felt that my doctors had completely minimized what would become of me with the surgery. And so with time and with hormone replacement and with a lot of emotional and psychiatric support and with my family support, I've been able to overcome my greatest challenges. And that's where I'm at today.
Thank you, Georgia. Thank you so much for that. I'm sure it's very inspiring for people to actually listen to you as well as read your blogs. And I was very inspired with your strength and your resilience, I should say. Thank you so much for being here with us. Megan is a genetic counselor. I'm sure she meets many people who have Lynch syndrome or who are pre-vivors, as Georgia is. Megan, can you please tell us what you see there? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, hi. So thank you so much for having me today, Priya. It's such an honor to be on the show. You know, I work with families who have hereditary cancer syndromes, such as Lynch syndrome. I actually work with a group of genetic counselors and physicians who specialize in Lynch syndrome, as well as other hereditary cancer syndromes, but Lynch syndrome is just really near and dear to my heart. The patients and the people that I meet, the family members just come in with these amazing stories like the one that Georgia just shared with us. And Lynch syndrome, like you said, is actually a very common, the most common hereditary cancer syndrome, about one in 370, we think, individuals actually have Lynch syndrome. And so it being so common, Lynch syndrome is something that needs to have more awareness brought to it. And that's what I've really found through my my years as a genetic counselor, is it needs to have a voice and more awareness brought to it. Because Lynch syndrome, although it does increase a person's risk for colon cancer and uterine cancer, ovarian cancers, and other gynecological and GI cancers, many of these cancers can actually be prevented if an individual actually knows that they have the condition. Unfortunately, that usually means that someone in the family has to get cancer so that we can start going down that road of what, you know, could this family have Lynch syndrome? And we'll talk a little bit more about how we diagnose a family with Lynch syndrome later today, but I sort of help families facilitate that process of doing some detective work, both with family history and doing some tumor testing, and then finally a blood or saliva test, we call a genetic test, to see if they do indeed carry what we call a genetic mutation, which is a mistake in a gene, causing it not to work correctly in the genes that you mentioned, those mismatch repair genes. And if we can identify these families who have Lynch syndrome, then we can ultimately support them in helping them to hopefully prevent or at least detect these cancers at a very early and treatable stage. As you mentioned, colon cancer is one of the most common cancers in the world, and it's just so unfortunate because colon cancer is also one of the only preventable cancers. And if we know that these individuals with Lynch syndrome who have an increased risk for colon cancer and at a very much younger age, if we know that they're at risk, we know that they should be getting colonoscopy much, much earlier than the general population, you know, starting at 20 years old instead of 50 years old, and having them annually, because we know that these polyps that they develop that turn into cancer can develop much quicker than the general population. And so it's really just been an amazing journey and privilege that I've been on with some of these families to identify these families who have Lynch syndrome and then really use this information as a knowledge is power in a way to empower these families to get the screening that they need, to become educated, and to hopefully sort of share their information with other at-risk relatives, because that's another big barrier, is really communicating this important information, not just to your mom, your dad, and brother and sister, but this can really affect cousins and aunts and uncles and grandparents and so on. It's really a family affair. So I just feel so fortunate to be able to work with these families and hopefully prevent some of these cancers in these families, because they can be prevented if they are known about.
Thank you, Megan. We'll learn more about Lynch syndrome from you as we continue our discussion. Hi, Dave. It's great to have you here, and I think as I was reading your bio, you're a 3-time genetic cancer survivor. Now, I don't think there's anything more inspiring than that. Can you please share your story with our audience today?
Well, as I like to say, I was hoping for a charm and good looks, but unfortunately, this is what I've inherited. So, yes, colon cancer and obviously now Lynch syndrome, now that's diagnosed, has been a part of my life pretty much as far as I can remember. My grandfather had colon cancer in his 60s. He ultimately lived well into his 80s with an ostomy. My father got colon cancer in his 40s. He is, after his surgery and chemotherapy and everything, he is now 82. With me, it hit me at 29. Like many who are young and diagnosed with colon cancer, you're often misdiagnosed. So we're talking 1997, and my primary physician essentially brushed it aside as stress-related, with what was going on in my life, and regardless of the fact that there was a family history of colon cancer written right on the chart, essentially sent me away for a couple of months until, finally the symptoms didn't go away, and I asked to see a specialist, and sure enough, stage 3 colon cancer at age 29. Surgery, chemotherapy, but it kind of, so to an extent it wasn't necessarily overwhelmingly a surprise. No one expects to get colon cancer at 29, but given the history of the family, it almost seemed, kind of apropos. My older brother, a couple of years later, when he turned 37, he had colon cancer as well. He had surgery. It was quite relatively early. He is now 52. One of the biggest differences is with me, it came back again as a second primary tumor at age 40. So that kind of scared everyone. It had been barely a year since my previous colonoscopy, and that's when the genetic testing was recommended, because we're talking about 2007, and that's when Lynch syndrome was in fact diagnosed. So upon getting the notification that it was genetic, I did start having additional screening done. So since 2007, I get, besides my colonoscopy, I also get an endoscopy. I get a cystoscopy. I get sometimes I switch off between CTs of chest, abdomen, and pelvis versus an ultrasound, and I also get a mammogram. So this is what I call my quarterly annuals, and because of that, I actually found the renal carcinoma on my right kidney. It was relatively early. It was relatively easy to remove, and kind of the folk hero that is Dave Dubin and alive and kicking is, I'm healthy almost all the time, except I have, tumors growing in me occasionally. I have parts removed, and then I continue on, and I play soccer, and I still keep a full life style of running a business and chasing the kids and doing everything that that I should be doing and more. And because of my personality, I've been Mr. January in the colander, the calendar of colon cancer survivors diagnosed below age 50. I have the foundation aliveandkicking.org. We do soccer events. We do speaking events. We do a lot of in-person awareness campaigns. And, I'm very good at spreading a message, and this is kind of my role in life. Oh, and the latest subject is our 18-year-old, now that he had gotten into colleges, did have his genetic testing, and sure enough, he is also Lynch positive, and he will have his first colonoscopy in a matter of weeks.
Wow. Thank you, Dave. Thank you so much for sharing that. What I have here is a list of questions that we are going to discuss, and they're thrown out to all three of you. We'll go in the order, Georgia, Megan, Dave. And all of you are unmuted. You can pitch in whenever you find you have something to share. So shall I begin with the first one?
Yes.
Sure.
Yes. So, Georgia, the first, you take it first. It might be difficult for people to decide to go for genetic testing for Lynch syndrome. I think Dale would also know that now because he's just got his eldest son tested. Anyways, how important do you think getting genetic counseling is for such family members, and how does it help them?
I highly recommend that people with the possibility of having Lynch syndrome definitely seek out genetic counseling before and after testing. Lynch syndrome is a highly emotionally taxing diagnosis to deal with for many people. I speak to many people every week who are either being tested or have been tested and they're Lynch positive, and those that do not see the genetic counselors are the ones who have the most difficulty with it. Genetic counselors have a variety of resources that can help one get through the roller coaster of emotions that one could possibly face during that time. They can provide you with information regarding support groups, psychotherapists who specialize in genetic mutations. They can also help give you information regarding clinical trials and whatnot. Most importantly, what genetic counselors, unlike doctors, is they have the time to go over and over what the implications of Lynch syndrome entail and are aware of the plethora of the annual screening measures. Where many of the doctors are not. Many doctors believe Lynch syndrome is primarily just about colon cancer. And they fail to recognize the dozens of other cancers which may develop as a result of having Lynch. Genetic counselors may also answer questions regarding basic health and life insurance concerns, and they can also provide you with the necessary tools to help you discuss your test results with your family. For example, my stellar genetic counselor provided me with a letter to give to each one of my family members on the paternal side, which is where I inherited the gene. Mm-hmm. And it gave them a brief description of what Lynch syndrome was and the cancers affiliated with it, and it encouraged them to seek out genetic testing. And so I, in that regard, I really believe all of those are stellar reasons as to why you should see a genetic counselor. I maintain a relationship with my genetic counselor. We speak frequently, and I think it's very, very important to have a genetic counselor because they're able to give you resources, unlike doctors can. So.
And we have our genetic counselor with us. Megan, what do you think? What do you do? What is the method you follow when people come in for getting Lynch syndrome tested? Do you think they're, what is the emotional condition? What is it that they expect when they come to you?
Okay. Well, I think, first of all, Georgia did an excellent job of giving an overview of what genetic counselors can provide. Honestly, when someone walks through that door, we never really know what sort of state of mind or emotion they're going to be in. Some of these family members have watched many family members, unfortunately, go through diagnoses of cancer and potentially pass away from their cancer. So there can be that connection to death and cancer and Lynch syndrome when they come in. So it can be very just anxiety-provoking just for them to even set foot inside the hospital, let alone talk about their risk for cancer. And for other people, it doesn't seem to impact them as much. Maybe they don't have as much personal attachment or experience exposure to cancer, or it's something that I've heard people just say, you know, it's just what our family does. They just get cancer. And it's something they've almost accepted and expected to get in their lifetime. And so depending upon where the person is coming from emotionally, it really sort of sets up our counseling experience with them to discuss their risk for Lynch syndrome. Many people don't realize that if their mom or dad has Lynch syndrome, it doesn't necessarily mean that they will have Lynch syndrome and that they will get cancer. You know, you can have either a positive or a negative genetic test if a first-degree relative has a known genetic mutation to cause Lynch syndrome. So we're able to sort of debunk some of these myths. People come in thinking that it might just only affect the men in the family or the women in the family based on their family history. Or they might not even know what cancers are really associated with Lynch syndrome. So we go everywhere from sort of the basics of Lynch syndrome, genetics 101, cells, DNA, to cancer risk in Lynch syndrome, how Lynch syndrome is passed on. So if they did indeed have Lynch syndrome themselves, as Dave was mentioning with his son, what would be the implication for their children? And when would their children be ready to test? That's a very charged topic in itself. We as genetic counselors really believe in autonomy and the right to choose whether or not you want to know if you have a genetic condition like Lynch syndrome. So we typically recommend that children undergo genetic testing at the age of 18 for a few reasons. One, because we're not going to recommend any sort of change in their medical management until the age of 18 or 20. So a genetic test result isn't going to change their medical management. And two, it allows the child to be old enough and really developed enough to know whether or not they're ready to handle this information. Of course, there are circumstances where children need to be tested younger than 18, but we do go through all of these things, and I think, you know, Georgia brings up the really important part about the sharing of the genetic information with family members. And when an individual walks through our door and sits down, we're not just looking at them, we're looking at their family as well. So even though we might be diagnosing the patient in front of us with Lynch syndrome, already, like I said before, this is a family affair. And whether it's writing a dear family letter, as we call them, explaining the condition, which is what Georgia got from her genetic counselor, or providing the individual with other sort of resources, for example, kintalk.org, which is a family communication website for individuals with Lynch syndrome. We're developing online social media tools at kintalk.org for families to upload their genetic information and share them privately and securely, but in an electronic fashion on kintalk, because it can be very difficult to share this information for a number of reasons. And so just making sure that we really cover all those bases in a genetic counseling session and being very aware of the person's emotional state of mind during that session, which is subject to change from when they walk in the door to when they leave, or even when we meet with them for that second time to actually discuss their genetic test results. So much can change as somebody processes the information they're hearing. So it's an amazing journey as a genetic counselor to go on with somebody. And I think the amount of information and the tools and the resources and support, I would hope, are sort of priceless to our patients coming in the door in terms of helping them to better understand what their options are as they sort of navigate their way down that road.
Dave, are you just mentioning your eldest got genetically tested for Lynch syndrome? So how difficult, I know it was necessary, but how difficult was it to actually go in for the test?
I'm
sorry, Dave. Go ahead. I didn't hear.
Was that a question for me? I couldn't hear.
Yes, Dave. I was just saying that you just got your eldest son tested for Lynch syndrome. So was it very difficult to go in for this test, going in for the genetic testing?
Well, the in terms of ease of use, getting genetic testing is actually very easy.
Not ease of use. I'm just wondering the emotional aspect behind it, because you have a history of Lynch syndrome. Of course, it was necessary to get your son tested. But I want to understand how families, you know, maintain the balance, you know, and get their children tested. It's so important and so very, might be so very difficult. I'm just trying to understand that.
Well, again, you know, people are different in how they react to information. Like Georgia, we are a firm believer in knowing more so than not knowing. And don't get me wrong, there are a lot of people that we do know who have not gotten genetic testing or have not looked into it simply because they are afraid of it or do not know. But because it's around us so prevalently, it's been such a big factor in our lives. To an extent, we've kind of embraced the concept that this is going to be here, and because of that, we've been able to deal with it. It's not easy. I've been told that I make it look easy, which is nice, but it's not an easy thing to go through. But we've been very open and upfront with our children because the timeline for the men in our family, the diagnosis has gotten younger and younger. So if you do the rule of thumb of 10 years being younger than the parent, when I was 29, you know, the 18-year-old is right on track. So, you know, we would prefer that he comes up negative, obviously, with any of his scopes or any other. But because of the genetic diagnosis, we do know to look sooner rather than later. Now, I also have a very good staff of doctors and nurses and genetic counselors who are there for me. So because of that, they've been there for my children, and, you know, everybody is comfortable with it. But that's not always the case with everybody. We see it in social media. We see people who have Lynch syndrome not getting anything else besides a colonoscopy, and we think it's, to an extent, they could do better.
So well said. Knowing is always better than not knowing. That's really great. Megan, maybe you could please explain to our audience, though I mentioned the genes which are associated with Lynch syndrome, are the same genes any indication of predisposition to any other chronic diseases as well?
So the genes associated with Lynch syndrome, as you mentioned, are called the mismatch repair genes. So those are the MLH1, MSH2, MSH6, and PMS2 genes. There is a fifth gene that was identified in the last few years to cause Lynch syndrome, and it's called EpCAM. EpCAM isn't a mismatch repair gene, but it is. It can be involved or associated with Lynch syndrome. But in terms of your question, if there are any other diseases that can be associated with mutations in these genes, there is another cancer condition or cancer predisposition called biallelic mismatch repair disorder or constitutional mismatch repair deficiency, CMMRD. And this occurs in individuals who inherit not one genetic mutation, but two genetic mutations in the same mismatch repair gene. So, for example, if your mother had a mutation in her MLH1 gene and your father had a mutation in his MLH1 gene and you inherited both mutations from mom and dad, you would develop something called CMMRD. This is a very severe cancer syndrome that occurs typically in childhood. We've seen it, unfortunately, as early as, you know, newborns. And it seems to have a bit of a different cancer spectrum than Lynch syndrome in that we see many young individuals diagnosed with brain tumors very, very early in life. We also see leukemias. We see colon cancer in very, very young children. And these are cancers that you would not typically see at this age in an individual with Lynch syndrome. So it's sort of this super Lynch syndrome, I guess, if you will. And so it's really important, if you know that you have Lynch syndrome, to discuss that with your partner before you have children, or if you have already had children and you find out that you both indeed have Lynch syndrome, it's important to make sure that your children haven't inherited both mutations, which would cause CMMRD. If they only inherit one mutation, then they would have Lynch syndrome.
So do we have grades like high risk or low risk in Lynch syndrome?
We do. We do have a high risk and sort of low risk, if you will, different genes. So when you're saying high risk, I'm assuming you mean high risk for cancer versus a lower risk for cancer, depending upon which gene you inherit. And so we know that with the MLH1 and the MSH2 genes, those would be considered maybe your high-risk or high-grade genes, if you will, being that if you develop a mutation or if you inherit a mutation, I should say, in the MLH1 or MSH2 genes, you have about an 80% lifetime chance of developing colon cancer and up to about a 60% lifetime chance for endometrial cancer. And there are a number of other cancers associated with these genes. Dave mentioned cancer of the renal pelvis or the kidney. Ovarian cancer is another organ that we know is at risk. And then others such as gastric cancer, pancreatic cancer, and so on. The other two mismatch repair genes might be considered as what you would say low risk in this disease. The risk is so much higher than the general population if you have a mutation in MSH6 and PMS2, but it's lower than if you had, the risk is lower than if you had a mutation in MLH1 and MSH2. Those with an MSH6 gene mutation have up to about a 20% lifetime chance for colon cancer and up to about a 26% lifetime chance for endometrial cancer, while those with PMS2 gene mutation have about a 20% lifetime chance for colon cancer and about a 15% chance for endometrial cancer. So there is a difference in the cancer risk, but those risks are still real, and therefore we still do recommend screening regardless of sort of the low risk versus the high risk genes, if you will, in Lynch syndrome.
Thank you, Megan. Thank you so much for that. Georgia, please help us understand the 3-2-1-0 rule in relation to Lynch syndrome diagnosis.
So basically, the 3-2-1-0 rule is a way which Lynch syndrome is diagnosed. It's the common method used to recognize the classic patterns of cancer within a family. The rule of thumb that helps people recognize Lynch syndrome is this pattern where there's the, I'm sorry, please forgive me, the pattern represents three people in a family with either colon or uterine in two or more generations, and then with one person diagnosed with cancer below the age of 50. The zero represents the designation that a rare condition called familial polyposis, which is characterized by hundreds or thousands of polyps that line the colon at once, has been excluded. The second way to recognize Lynch syndrome is by special stains and tests that can be performed on tumor tissue. Pathologists have developed very good methods at recognizing the features of Lynch syndrome, and now these tests show whether the cancers have the typical hallmark features of Lynch syndrome. These pathology results can lead physicians to order additional diagnostic tests to confirm the diagnosis of Lynch. Ultimately, Lynch is diagnosed on the basis of a gene test. We mentioned blood test. It can also be done with saliva, but genetic testing for Lynch syndrome is now the standard of care for patients and families with the mutation.
Yeah, and I'd love to just piggyback off of George's answers. We're really fortunate that we can work with both the tumor of an individual with Lynch syndrome, or we can go ahead and do a genetic test through blood and saliva. Tumor testing, though, has a better bang for your buck, if you will, in that about 90% of all tumor testing will give you an answer that you're looking for. So there are false positives with tumor testing, but if you do what's called special staining, as Georgia mentioned, which is called IHC or immunohistochemistry, looking for the four mismatch repair proteins, as well as MSI, microsatellite instability, you have about a 90% chance of identifying a tumor with Lynch syndrome. Genetic testing, the technology that we have is getting better and better, but we're still only identifying about 70 to maybe 80% of all gene mutations that cause Lynch syndrome through today's technology with genetic testing. And so from my standpoint, if you have a tumor and you can screen the tumor and you can do genetic testing, those are the two best ways to really identify an individual with Lynch syndrome. And then, of course, their family history as well is very, very important. But it's really the combination of family history and the tumor testing and the genetic testing, as Georgia mentioned, that really gives an individual a diagnosis with Lynch syndrome. And sometimes we can't even find, in the beginning, we can't even find the family's genetic change or genetic mutation that causes their Lynch syndrome. But based on their tumor and the special staining that's done and based on their family history, we know that indeed the family has Lynch syndrome. We just can't find it in their genes yet. So we have a ways to go with our technology, but we're getting better and better about identifying families.
When we are on the point of genetic testing, Megan, can you please talk a little bit about the mutational analysis of PMS2 gene in Lynch syndrome?
Yeah, so with PMS2 is one of those tricky genes, especially in the very beginning, because it has what's called a pseudogene, meaning there's a DNA code or a genetic sequence in a human's DNA that looks very, very similar to that genetic code of the PMS2 gene. And so for a while, technology couldn't figure out if we were testing the PMS2 gene, the actual functioning gene, or if we were testing what's called a pseudogene, which is a false gene. It doesn't actually create the PMS2 protein that's involved with mismatch repair. But due to current technology, we have been able to remedy this issue, and we are able to analyze PMS2 with technology called full sequencing, as well as deletion and duplication analysis, which are two ways to look at the gene. And so for individuals who thought that they may have a mutation in PMS2, maybe their tumor showed a loss of the PMS2 protein many, many years ago, maybe 5-6 years ago, but the genetic testing for PMS2 was negative, I would recommend that they go back to their genetic counselor and their doctor and have a repeat genetic test done, as testing has gotten much better for this PMS2 gene. And I think we're going to learn a lot about what the PMS2 families really look like. We've had very limited information on these families, partially because there aren't as many families with Lynch syndrome who have PMS2 gene mutations. But part of that reason is because we weren't able to actually identify these families. And so we'll be learning a lot more about what the importance of the PMS2 gene is in Lynch syndrome, what the cancer risk for these families are, and so on, now that we can actually do proper genetic testing, and which includes sequencing and then deletion duplication for the PMS2 gene.
Mm-hmm. Lynch syndrome is said to follow an autosomal dominant inheritance. Georgia, it would be great if you could explain to our audience in layman terms what it means.
So basically, autosomal dominant means that your child has a 50-50 chance of having the mutation themselves. So my son, who has not been tested, has a 50-50 chance of having Lynch syndrome. If a disease is autosomal dominant, it means you only get the abnormal gene from one parent in order to inherit the disease. Inheriting the disease or a condition or trait depends on the type of chromosome affected, and it also depends on whether the trait is dominant or recessive. Lynch syndrome is dominant, and a dominant inheritance means that the abnormal gene from the parent can cause disease, even though the matching gene from the other parent is normal. The abnormal gene in this situation will dominate. And so each child's risk is independent of whether their sibling has the disorder or not. So, for example, if the first child has Lynch syndrome, the next child has the same 50% risk of inheriting Lynch syndrome as well. Children who do not inherit the abnormal gene will not develop or pass on Lynch syndrome. Lynch syndrome does not skip generations. So if someone has the abnormal gene that is inherited in an autosomal dominant manner, then the parents should also be tested for the abnormal gene, because chances are, you know, the child inherited from one of them. There are three examples of autosomal dominant disorders that I could think of. One is Huntington's disease, which there is no cure for, and which many people opt out of genetic testing for. The other is neurofibromatosis/1, and then, of course, Lynch syndrome. So there's not too many, fortunately.
Yes. Megan, but not all people who carry the Lynch syndrome gene develop cancer. How can we explain that?
So that is true that not everyone who actually inherits a mutation in one of their mismatch repair genes will actually go on to develop cancer. And it's for a number of reasons, actually. You know, one of them being which gene has the mutation in it. As I discussed earlier, there was sort of that high-risk genes that give you a very high or increased risk for colon, endometrial, and other cancers, MLH1 and MSH2. And then there were those other genes, MSH6 and PMS2, that still had an increased risk for these cancers, but they weren't as high as that 80 and 60% lifetime chance. They were more in the 20% and 15%. And so when you look, you know, when you flip those numbers around, somebody with a PMS2 mutation, they have a 20% lifetime chance for colon cancer, which means they have an 80% lifetime chance for not developing colon cancer in their lifetime. And so it depends a lot upon which gene you have inherited that has the genetic mutations. Also, if you learn that you have Lynch syndrome, especially at a younger age, and you can start doing your routine screenings, which would be your annual colonoscopy, as well as, you know, some people are doing GYN cancer screening for ovarian and uterine cancer, or actually having their ovaries and uterus removed, as Georgia had mentioned. That is also reducing their risk of the two core cancers associated with Lynch syndrome. From the data that we've seen, annual colonoscopy, as long as the colonoscopy prep has to be good, and the colonoscopist, the technician doing the colonoscopy, your GI doctor, has to really be giving a thorough look, especially for any sort of flat polyps, as those can be seen in Lynch syndrome. So as long as you're getting really good, thorough colonoscopies, you know, every 12 months, then you should really be reducing your risk of colon cancer to maybe even to the general population, which is about 5%, up from that 80%. Again, of course, colonoscopies, you know, aren't foolproof, and there have been instances where somebody does develop an interval cancer in between that 1 year. So there can be those things, but individuals can really sort of reduce their risk or maybe never develop a colon cancer if they continue to have colonoscopy. And then, like I said, removing the uterus and the ovaries through a hysterectomy and bilateral salpingo-oophorectomy, that reduces a woman's risk of endometrial cancer to almost 100% and ovarian cancer, we believe, to about 90%. So by removing those organs, you really remove their risk. So if an individual knows that they have Lynch syndrome and they can get their screenings, then they can potentially live their life never have developed a cancer. And that's really, you know, the goal for the screening and the preventative risk-reducing surgery.
Thank you, Megan. I would like to move on to the management of Lynch syndrome. Now we have talked a lot about the science behind Lynch syndrome. Dave, you are physically very active. You coach soccer. What is your Lynch syndrome management regimen as of now?
Well, my Lynch syndrome management regimen is, as I alluded to, on a medical standpoint, I get four different checks once a year. So I do get the annual colonoscopy and endoscopy at the same time. I do get the cystoscopy to check for, you know, prostate and bladder. I get the, you know, it's change off between CTs versus ultrasound of the chest, abdomen, and pelvis. To obviously check the kidneys and other vital organs. And then, of course, I get the annual mammogram because I could be, you know, one of that 10% of the breast cancer population that is men. So that is my routine medically. After that, I do take relatively good care of myself. I do try and stay active. After 40 years of soccer, I have arthritis in both knees, so I'm only allowed to play once a week. But in between, I do get some good exercise, on the stationary bike or swimming, something with low impact on the knees. I've tried to maintain a weight that is within, you know, ideal body weight range for my height. You know, I'm 6 feet tall, so I try and stay somewhere in the neighborhood of 185 pounds if possible. And I don't overdo any one thing over another. I don't go strictly vegan, but I do try and make sure I have plenty of fiber and plenty of water on a daily basis. I'm also, I do eat meat, but it's not that often. And, I'll be the first to say I have a sweet tooth as much as anybody. So it's all about balance, and it's about making sure that it's as much emotional as it is physical in terms of handling this and making sure that it doesn't overwhelm you, it doesn't consume you, but you know it and you deal with it.
Dave, yesterday I received an email from one of our audience who read your bio on our panel page, and they had asked him, can an active lifestyle like Dave help during cancer treatment?
Well, I will say this, back in 1997.
Yeah, exactly. That, I'm sure that answers the audience's question. And that's the reason
I played soccer through chemotherapy. Yeah.
It's like we are actually having a panel next week, a couple of days, and we are discussing cancer and exercise. So certainly when I was reading your bio, I was very impressed that you kept going in spite of all the odds, and certainly it has helped in keeping you upbeat. What do you say?
No, I will be the first to say that I also do have some bad moments where I wish things were different, but it's
mm-hmm.
not. So I try and make those moments fewer and far between and try and be upbeat and positive. I don't tell other people that they have to deal with Lynch syndrome the way I do. That's their choice. But I try and lead by example, and if my example helps others, then I'm very pleased.
Thank you, Dave. Georgia, what is your management regimen?
How much time do we have left?
We have around 3 or 4 minutes. We have 4 minutes. I think we can manage.
So I meditate a lot. I believe in the power of the mind, and I spend a lot of time meditating every week. I do follow a mostly vegan diet. I exercise profusely. I love to run. I haven't been able to run for the past 5 weeks because I sprained my ankle on the way to a hike, but I do run, and I do believe in getting some sun. Vitamin D is very beneficial in preventing colon cancer, and getting it from the sun is the best way to get it. And being Greek helps with that. So I do spend a little time in the sun. I do read a lot about other genetic disorders, which puts Lynch syndrome into tremendous perspective for me, because there are things that are far worse than Lynch. And there are a lot of horrific things that affect children, and that really gives me tremendous perspective. I also blog and write a lot about Lynch syndrome, not only for my blog, but for esteemed websites. I recently wrote a post for ASCOscancer.net. I've written for West Middlesex Hospital in London. I communicate with a lot of people who have been recently diagnosed with Lynch, and I'm basically available to them for emotional support. You know, I've really come to terms with the diagnosis. I feel much better than I did a year ago. The four-month situation seems to be rectified, and I'm doing quite well, actually. So other than that, I go to Mayo once a year, which is very helpful, and I get all my screening done at once. I'm there for a couple of days, and I know my results right away, and I'm out quickly. So I've never had a polyp. I've never had cancer. I'm 43 years old. They don't know what I'm doing, but they keep encouraging me to keep doing what I'm doing. Because considering my family history, I should have had so much as a polyp so far, and I have not. So they think it's the constellation of factors that I participate in that has been very pivotal in me in not developing any cancer.
Okay, one last question. We have just time for that. Are there any clinical trials that are ongoing with related to management of Lynch syndrome?
Yes. Right now, I believe there's one occurring at MD Anderson in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Megan, are you aware of any others?
Yeah, there are a number of clinical trials associated with Lynch syndrome currently going on. I believe either enrolling or about to enroll, not just here in the U.S., but also around the world. I know the Netherlands right now is working on a vaccination for Lynch syndrome. But if you are interested in clinical trials, I recommend, and you live in the United States, I recommend going to clinicaltrials.gov. And under, when you land on the homepage, it will say search for studies. I recommend you type in Lynch syndrome or HNPCC, and you will be able to pull up all of the active clinical trials, and then you just need to find which clinical trial works best for you. I'm happy to help if you are looking for a clinical trial. You can always write to me on kintalk.org and let me know what you're interested in, and we can see if we can find an open clinical trial for you.
Yeah, I think that just flew by. Georgia, Megan, and Dave, thank you so very much for being with us today. I'm sure the discussion was helpful to our audience. Listeners, please do let us know what you would like to hear about on our Rare Cancers and Disorders Talk series. And the link to today's show will be shared with all participants. Please join us on 19th June at 6 p.m. ET, where we will be discussing why and how exercise can help cancer patients and survivors. You can always visit curepanel.carefeed.net for details of upcoming shows. And you can always mail me, priya@shilex.com. And we end with the note that if you are concerned that you may inherit Lynch syndrome, please visit a genetic counselor and get help. Thank you so much, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.